photography. Society. The podcast.
Hi, this is Petra, Emilia,
Rafael,
Sophie,
and Patricia.
And we are an international group of MA students on the Photography and Society course at the Royal Academy of Arts in The Hague.
And this is Photography and Society, the podcast,
created in response to the Undisciplining Photography Symposium.
Welcome along and thanks for listening.
This episode is about entangled landscape. My name is Petra and I'll be your host for today. For this episode, we travel to Rotterdam Harbour. Quite a windy place, actually, and you'll hear that. We wander around the harbour, discuss the landscape, and, of course, talk about photography. But before we dive deeper into the topic, I'd like to invite you to listen to Photography on the Run. In Photography on the Run, we ask people to describe one photograph that has to do with the topic of this episode. Later on, we will tell you more about the image, and if you want, you can check it on our Instagram or on our Undisciplining Photography Symposium website.
Photography on the Run.
I see the woods and I see coldness.
I see trees and branches.
I can see the forest and I can see that it's like inverted, probably like into the negative.
And I see nature, but it is quite interesting that I cannot say any specific plant or anything. It's almost like all of the nature besides the trees and the soil becomes a mist.
And the trees are not straight, they're like in the angles.
I now realize that I'm holding the image tilted, so the image of the trees appear vertically.
Yeah, I don't really know how about the frame. Like looking, you can look at it from any sides really, because there isn't like any top or back. So it's like very free.
It was by intuition that I tilted the image to see the vertical lines first, to understand the photo.
But then I'm also wondering, what angle is it? Am I looking at the top part or is it at the ground? Because it's a bit of a weird angle. Maybe this photo was like taken on a high elevation point and then looking down.
So for me, yeah, it looks like reversed colors, but it also can be like the real photo when it's darker, getting darker and the special lighting. But I think in the nature, it's more like photoshopped image.
I guess it was manipulated in color.
Oh, so this is like not edited picture. Okay. Well, this is interesting.
I like it a lot when you like look at the image and you think like, wow, this is nicely photoshopped or nice, I don't know, image. And then you're realizing that this is just nothing was happening with the image in Photoshop. It was just really taken like this.
It reminds me of like some lucid dreaming.
It looks like from these horror movies when someone is running away in the forest and he's falling down and there is like the image is turning. So for me it's like a lot of movement in this photo.
Like you're on the drugs or something like this and this is what you see. Like everything's strange and like have different colors.
This is quite a Lynchian picture. It reminds me of David Lynch. I guess because of the sensation of the owl staring at you. I've seen Twin Peaks maybe too much.
For me, it reminds me of the time when I was going to the woods near in the Netherlands, Den Haag, and I was digging up ground for dirt because I wanted to find dirt so bad, because in Netherlands it's so hard to find dirt, like natural dirt. Because the dirt in the sea and the near the beach is also actually man-made. It was brought there, not was from there. So it reminded me of how man-made the land in Netherlands is and how it differs from my home country. Because in my home country, you can just get dirt anywhere and it's from the land itself.
Ladies and gentlemen, the fuel bomb is Amsterdam Airport, Schiphol. After Schiphol, this train will continue as intercity service to Leiden, with final stop the Ring Central.
I'm on my way to meet Olga Raskowska and we're going to Rotterdam Harbour. She's an alumni of MAPS, Master of Photography and Society, and we're going to talk about entangled landscape. And do I hear you thinking, entangled landscape, what is it? I totally feel you, and that's why we're going to talk to Olga, because she knows everything about it. She's one of the teachers of the thematic seminar Entangled Landscape, and we are visiting Rotterdam Harbour because, as Olga explained to me earlier, that is an entangled landscape, and I'm really curious to know why, and what the connection with photography is, of course, and why she's so interested in it. I would say plenty of stuff to talk about. Hi there. How are you doing?
Hello. Hi. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too. I think we have a nice day, haven't we? It's quite sunny.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I was this is every time I'm worried about the rain in the Netherlands, it never happens. So I'm really excited. We're going to go to the Rotterdam Harbour, which I have to admit, I've never been there and I always wanted to go, but for some reason it was just maybe so easy when I was living here. So now I had to come all the way from Poland to finally visit. We're going to have a little adventure.
Okay, let's go then.
Okay, I've quite randomly found some places on the map that looked interesting. So I'm just going to do that. And my Polish guide is gonna guide us.
Skieruj się na południowy wschód. Następnie skręć w lewo.
Maybe we should go on the grassy side of the sandy heap. Because that looks like something that we can actually sit on. Yeah. As opposed to anything else here,
yeah,
which isn't meant for
sitting
or relaxing or talking.
No,
yeah,
sure. It's a bit of an awkward surroundings here, isn't it?
Yeah, I just realized that we've drove for good, I don't know, let's say altogether we probably drove for at least 50 kilometers here.
50?
Yeah, I think so, in the harbor. Went to a gas station, which is ironic. I was almost running out of gas and we had to find a gas station basically surrounded by oil everywhere. But we've managed, and the only people that we've seen who were sort of pedestrians or cyclists,
yeah,
were by the ferry, right? Because that's the place that was meant for
tourists,
for them, for us. And otherwise I haven't seen a person. Yeah, and it's not easily accessible if you don't have a car. You don't really have a way of coming here otherwise, other than, you know, a touristic ferry, which is supposed to show you the wonders of the harbor, which I'm very also curious about.
Yes,
all of those shapes, and it looks like building blocks of Lego or something, and it just, yeah, I cannot compare it to anything other than that I know.
Nope.
And it always makes you wonder, what is it? What is it for? And what purpose does it serve?
Yeah,
and that curiosity also then feels quite guilty, but it's there. Yeah, you usually need to have something that is meant in that infrastructure for humans to operate it, like stairs or something like that, to have any sense of scale. Because now I'm looking at these huge blue, I don't know, machines. And then I see containers and I know how huge the containers are.
And they look very small.
And they look tiny. This really helps, actually, that we're standing on this heap, on this little mountain.
Yeah.
And I also see plants that I recognize. My first instinct, there is a lot of nettle here. And my first instinct is...
Metal, you say?
Nettle.
Nettle, yeah?
It's a stingy thing. The stingy plant that is also very healthy and very good to cook with. And I pick it very often to cook with it. So that's sort of as soon as I see it, I forget about the harbor and then I just want to pick nettle and, bring it home for tea or something. Oh, there is actually a rabbit that just... Yeah, it disappeared behind that heap. But there was a little rabbit jumping around.
You do see some animals. We saw some goose on our way here. And we saw a lot of seagulls. Yeah, of course.
That were blocking the road.
Yeah, like sheeps do normally. Yeah.
But that all makes me really, I don't know, it's maybe in a sense humbling, or maybe then you can take things a little bit less seriously. Looking at all of the scary infrastructure there is still this life that survives within it and doesn't probably care so much about, you know, the rabbits or the seagulls aren't wasting their days thinking about what that infrastructure does. They have to somehow live around it. But if they are here, then they probably can.
Yeah.
So it somehow makes me feel a little bit better.
You told me the other day that you always have a kind of a ritual to adjust to the place where you are. So it's like maybe we can just do that ritual, or
so. I need to first sort of land in my body, and then I need to land in a place. So there are those sort of two stages, and you start with, you know, with sort of everything that's closest to you, and then you can slowly look further away from yourself. And I also really like doing them because I can then adjust myself to different scales. And this here is a very new setting for me, so I guess that the effects of those exercises are gonna work differently according to the scale, because usually when I do them, I'm trying to reach to scale to smaller scales, to smaller beings. And here it's the opposite. It's the smaller things and beings feel already sort of nice and familiar, but everything else is so huge. But I hope that that will, these exercises can help us anyway. And they just also very simply take you out from your day.
Yeah, so you have a little notebook with you.
I have a notebook, which
just,
if I would lose it, I would be completely lost as well. And I have some exercises written in it for different purposes. So we're gonna, it's very windy though, so the notebook isn't the greatest. So we're gonna do this exercise, and I invite everyone to sort of join along, no matter where you are, really. It's just gonna be probably a couple of minutes, but we're gonna do it here too and see how we feel after. So first, this is just gonna be about us just checking in how we feel within our bodies, and then activating some other senses, and then finally sort of landing in the surrounding. So first, what I would ask for you to do is to turn off your screens so they don't disrupt what's going on. And if you can actually walk outside, that's ideal. But if you cannot, then just maybe find a window or a place from which you can peek outside into the into the world. And you can sit or you can stand, that depends on how you feel comfortable. We are currently sitting, and I feel quite nicely because I feel a bit more grounded in this strange space. And I would invite you to close your eyes. Very simply start with a couple of deep breaths. And then imagining you can imagine a line that sort of scans your body from the top of your head down to your feet. Imagine that that line goes very, very slowly, and you go with it, and you just check in how different parts of your body feel. And you don't need to do anything about it, it's just to realize how are you feeling. Are you rested, or maybe you're a bit tired? Try to let your body be loose. If you're outside, then maybe the wind influences a little bit how you move. Just think about the surface that you're standing on. How does it feel? What is it made of? If you're sitting or if you're lying on the ground, then you can do that with a bigger surface of your body. And then maybe also try to move or wiggle around a little bit to just feel it a little bit better. And now, still with your eyes closed, let's move our attention to what happens in the sounds that we hear. And maybe first try to hear the sound of your own breathing, or the sounds that are closest to yourself. Recognize those individual sounds that happen. What are they? Who makes them? What makes them? Are they long? Are they continuous? Or are they sudden? And maybe now you can start looking for some rhythm in those sounds. And the sounds that happen every now and then, but you can already expect that they're gonna come back. And now slowly you can, whenever you're ready, open your eyes and look around, and maybe you can recognize places or things that those sounds came from and connect them to the shapes that they take.
So what sounds did you hear and connect to the surroundings?
There is the sound of like a siren or an alarm that happens, which is very sort of forward. And I was just really going in my head about what alarm is it? What happens? Because it sort of brings me back to the harbor and to these sort of, you know, in infrastructures that I don't understand. Yeah. It was very dominant, a dominant sound, but somehow I wanted to.
Yeah, were you distracted by it?
Not really distracted, I was just curious.
For me, it sounded a bit like seagulls or something.
Ah.
So it's like, okay, it's a seagull sign in the harbor. Then.
Yeah. Yeah, now I, it's funny because now I look around and everything seems so much smaller. Like somehow now the things that are closest to me feel much bigger. Like even you look sort of bigger, and this heap that we're sitting on and the plants, they feel very big. And then now when I look around at those machines that were so sort of overwhelming before, they look really tiny. I don't know how that happens, but maybe that's some readjustment that then happens. And maybe that's just the... Yeah. I don't know exactly how these things work. Sometimes I'm really surprised by the reactions that I have. It's sort of also nice to... It's almost like waking up again in a place and seeing it, you know, all over again. And all over again, recognizing what's happening all around me. But maybe with a little bit less of this, like... Because we had a certain build-up, right? And conversations that we had in the car and everything that... happened, and now I feel like I just landed here out of nowhere and I'm just like slowly mapping and recognizing what happens around me. And I like that feeling, and that's the feeling that I usually somehow search for.
Now I'm just gonna try to descend this mountain kind of green heap in the middle of the harbor. In the meantime, Olga was running to some nettle and she's harvesting it now. I guess it's for some tea. Is it for tea, Olga? Are you gonna make tea from it? She's gonna make pasta with it. Well, maybe. And tea. So we stopped here at a completely different place of the harbor, with a lot of seagulls, as you can hear, and a lot of giant heaps in a kind of very light gray, and then going over to dark gray. And there's also a plate that says where there's a CCTV camera guard. So we will probably be guarded. Oh, and there's Ocha's trying to point out something to me. Just walk up there.
I almost stepped into the seagull's nest with three eggs.
That's maybe why they make so much noise.
Maybe. Yeah, we probably shouldn't make them any more nervous, but I just wanted to show this to you because... Wow. They're beautiful eggs too. We're sorry.
We somehow stepped into a kind of breeding place of the seagulls, I guess. What I find so awkward is that in this very, very industrial surrounding, we see all those animals, the seagulls, the rabbits we saw earlier on. That's awkward, isn't it?
I don't know. I really like it. I mean, kind of makes me see it a little bit differently when you think that there are animals living here and that they have chosen this place also, you know, for nesting, for example. Because I think that we are very easily just seeing these places in a very sort of bad light, but also strictly from our perspective. And that, I think, puts them... Yeah, like reshuffles things a little bit. What's the most important for them? And if, you know, the infrastructure they maybe don't mind, the heaps they don't mind, but for example, maybe this is really well sheltered or, you know, for whatever reason they've chosen this place. So it really like the attention is elsewhere. And I think that's always just nice to think about.
So we went into the car because it was quite windy outside, and we're looking now at the Evergreen, which seems like a huge ship, I would say. This is part of the entangled landscape here in the harbour, but what is an entangled landscape actually, Olga? Tell me.
Yeah, a good question, and I would be curious about other sort of interpretations of that term, because I don't think that it has any definition. But the way I would understand an entangled landscape is that a landscape that you look at is actually not just one place. It's sort of a sum of many places and many stories, and it's this very dense, thick network of connections and of dependencies. It leads you to so many different spaces and to so many different stories and to so many livelihoods. And obviously this one that we're in today, a very, very crazy one, the landscape of the harbor in Rotterdam. This feels like not an end point, but a very important point of a larger chain. And I really wonder what are all of the places that it leads to. All of the places that, you know, products or resources or just matter flows from. And what this place means for them, which is what kind of transformation or maybe what kind of violence had to be sort of performed on them in order for all of this to work.
Do I hear you saying that if you want to be aware of the way the world functions, of the ecological damage being done to the world, you need to be here as well? You need to know this as well?
I don't think that you need to be necessarily here, and I don't think that we should, you know, exercise any kind of disaster tourism or maybe visit all of those places. But surely enough, there is some sort of infrastructure that holds it together somewhere where you are, somewhere where you live, where you come from. And I think it's quite interesting also to demand a bigger access to it, because we're so isolated. And even here, this is like public roads and we feel like intruders and we've been stopped. And that is for a... there is a very strong reason for that isolation. And, you know, to make everything basically more abstract and more detached, we are somehow losing touch with the physical world. And I think that we very often diminish the importance of that physical connection with things and material connection with things, and understanding what those things are and what those materials are and what are the forces that move them. And you know, it's also, especially if you think about the way you also study, it's very easy to sort of go up in the air and be in this, you know, just sort of swim in ideas and so on. Maybe that's just a personal need, but I really need to ground those ideas in materials and in the physicality of things and what they actually are and what they can actually tell you, because there is so much indication of, if you talk about, you know, ecological damage being done, there is a ton of indication that that you can read from the world around you, how it changes and what it's trying to say and how it really reflects that change. And and if you lose touch with that, if you lose that sensibility to it and this sort of awareness and attention, I think that that's just very easy for you to also act in a way that's not necessarily the most sensible to other beings.
And could you say then that photography can play a role in making this more open, more, so that more people know about it? Or?
Yeah, there obviously photography can play so many different roles, and making this visible is one of them. But it's also in what context do you put it, and how do you use this imagery? And also, what does this imagery do to the people who receive it? Does it actually do much? Because I think that seeing images is not the same as experiencing something.
But you were just saying that people shouldn't go here.
No, I'm not saying that I don't think that everybody has to go and have this experience firsthand. But then it's about how do you create images, or how do you create any kind of narrative or media around it, and what does it serve? The way I wish the work that I could do would work is to bring things a little bit closer together and to give you a sense that you have actually some sort of relationship with the physical world, and that it makes you curious and it makes you more observant. It makes you more sensitive, it makes you more empathetic, and it also makes you excited to interact with it. It depends on what are you trying to say. Sometimes sounds are much better for that, and sometimes it's just something that has to be embodied and cannot be looked at, you know, from far away. But I think that photography is also often a way for us to have this curiosity. And you cannot maybe stop at the, you know, at the surface of an image. That has to me, there has to be some other action that follows that. But it also is something that allows people, or is a reason for people to go and observe the world.
So what will be the other action then, if you're talking about another action?
Another action? Well, you know, we have our five senses, and we have other, you know, tools and devices, right? So photography is so important visual medium, but then being here, I think that we did this little exercise with listening, and today I'm obviously overwhelmed by the visuality of this all, and it's so perverse, but I'm also gonna really remember something that I needed to focus on a little bit more, which is the sound and how loud and monotonous is the hum of all of this working, and also how you have those, you know, sirens or alarms going off, and all of a sudden there are seagulls who are protecting of their, you know, nests. And also there is another thing I think about sound which is really interesting to me, is that it's much easier for it to travel. We today were stopped at the fence, possibly because there was a camera involved and there was a possibility that we were taking pictures. And I told the guard very honestly that I'm recording sound. And he didn't mind that, because sound isn't also a threat. I think that images are very often seen as an evidence or a threat, and sound being a more abstract thing, especially if it doesn't include words, is just not seen in that way. This sort of listening, for me, is important to cultivate, and I need to do it more. I need to sort of very consciously make time for it, because I collect images all the time, and I see things all the time, and that's my base. But it gives me a different experience, and I think also there is just something about being interactive with your surrounding, and maybe carefully interactive, but also playfully.
So, in what way, if you are interactive with all those means, with photography, with sounds, what kind of work are you making then?
I think that I need to look at, and this is something that I guess in photography and society and the program we also talk about, was about how to cultivate a practice and not necessarily a project-based work, to jump from one thing to another. And I think that very often in a practice, I think, or at least how I think about myself, I need those different tools to serve different purposes. And then you have those lines, or those maybe even those like pieces or puzzles that suddenly come together and they start making sense. This all of a sudden becomes a clump of something, and then it can be developed, and you know, it can be a book, and it can be a video, and it can be an action. And for me, the sort of opportunity to bring people together and to take them out somewhere and be in space and explore it together and cultivate also some sort of collectivity between people, is, I think, that brings me the most of something, of some sort of happiness or fulfillment. Or maybe I just see very directly how others react to people gathering.
So how would you describe your own practice then, being an alumni at MAPS?
I think it's a multi-modal practice of looking at the relationship between some sort of extraction and violent practices and nature colonization, etc., from a perspective of the communities or multi-species communities that aren't necessarily victims of that, but how they resist, how they adapt, how they grieve. And in that context, what's important for me is maybe not necessarily to build very elaborate stories, but to really get to this experiential part of it. So I think in that context, for me, it's really about cultivating observation and cultivating some sort of collectivity, because I think that that's something that takes a very big chunk of my life, is working with others and feeling that you and others aren't necessarily humans as well. And I think that is sort of a platform where we can communicate well and have sort of nice dynamics where you know, the researcher doesn't dominate the respondent or something, just because you're working towards something together, and you be it, you know, doing something in a garden or trying to figure out something together during a day of, I don't know, observing birds, right? But it's an experience that you go through together, and I think that those are, for me, very important.
Can you give some examples of what you've been doing so far?
Sure. I work with a group of people together with them in Warsaw, where I'm from, and we are exploring this wetland area, which is very, very big. It's 200 hectares and almost in the center of Warsaw, and it's somehow an invisible area. People don't really know about it and don't really care that much about it. It's sort of hidden between the highway and then the riverbank and between new buildings. And obviously there is a big conflict of interests between people who want to sell their land and, you know, to be built on. But this space is crucial for keeping the water relations intact. And it's also it's just inhabited by so many species that do not appear anywhere near Warsaw. And we have them there almost in the center. And it doesn't sort of, it's not very visited, which is a good thing and a bad thing, because it's invisible, which is dangerous, but then also because it's mostly inhabited by other species, they can, you know, they are left alone and can do their thing.
They live their life.
They live their life. Mm-hmm. I also don't think that humans are necessarily always the biggest threat to everything that is non-human, but if we would invade this place with too much human presence, that wouldn't necessarily be good either. And what we're trying to do is we work in three lanes, one of which is doing things actually there, so conducting small workshops and intimate gatherings of, you know, up to 10 people or something like that. And we develop together with a larger group of people, of artists and scientists, different ways of navigating that space that lets us understand and observe those other species that inhabit it, or other sort of substances, because we also look at water and we look at the peat. And we figure out how to, you know, embody that knowledge and how to get closer and sort of, you know, through the prism of maybe the life of the snail in that area, you can understand a much bigger picture about what are different versions of looking at that environment. So that's sort of one thing that we do. Another thing is this more mediated message, which is through, we have a website which is a peculiar archive of a sort, where we combine different types of stories and different types of knowledge all together in something that, because we work with scientists, we work with artists, we work with activists, we work with all sorts of, you know, narratives, but we don't want to put them in any hierarchy, so it's all sort of brought together. And it's also materials that we get from other people. So you have this strange archive that lets you discover this space through many different eyes without necessarily visiting it. Our third lane is thinking about advocacy and advocacy by people who are mostly from the arts and aren't necessarily led into, you know, those tables where things are being decided in a more administrative world, but we working together also with a more scientific you know, community, we are really arguing for that seat at the table and really looking at what can be done in terms of policies, but also how to really challenge them, because we're ultimately fighting for a more than human right to the city, and it's a very strange position to advocate for those other beings that we don't necessarily see them as weaker, but because they can be threatened by human actions, we are also as humans somehow responsible to speak up for them, and so now this is a very big question of how to organize that advocacy and how to create alliances between other groups, collectives, activists, places, organizations, etc., who work with similar topics, and how we can somehow empower ourselves to be a part of that process too.
You're describing your latest project and the different stages or lanes, do you call them, I guess,
mm-hmm.
You're working on. And what is your ultimate goal with all those different actions?
I think that obviously there is a very sort of straightforward goal of giving that space protection. We would like to see, I think, this space as this like a space for some experimental and more radical pedagogies being happening. Everybody can be influenced by it. So this is not just for artists or scientists or children or, you know, local residents, but how can we come together and share knowledge and just, yeah, cultivate those methods or ways of being in space and observing the space. Warsaw was all wetlands. We all come from wetlands. This is our sort of primary landscape that we are completely disconnected from. And for me, it took me 20-something years to realize where I'm from in that sense. And I always really craved a connection to my landscape and what it means. And I love those environments. They fascinate me so much. But they are challenging in how you can approach them and how you can navigate through them. But we would, and by we, I refer to this collective of six people in which we are doing those actions together with a larger network of our sort of allies and friends. We would really like to reconnect to that form of landscape and to, you know, in a long run, to allow for it to take up more space. This work started about a year ago, so when I was already graduating, and it was a very sort of happy turn of events because it connected so much to the graduation work that I was doing. I visited places of extraction. I was initially interested in one particular place of gold extraction in Romania, but then that project sort of, you know, transformed and changed and evolved. And I observed different spaces of extraction almost as spaces of performing violence on a body of a sort, and how those wounds are being healed and was that transformation. My grandparents were geologists and geographers, and they were mountaineers, and those were always the mountains that I would hear stories about and mountains that I would go to for my first trips. And you know, it's just a special somehow a special connection, and a lot of my family also came from those from that region, and those things started coming up as I started the work. I wasn't aware of all of it before.
Where's photography in this whole story?
Well, it doesn't really matter to me so much if we're talking about photography in this case or about other means of producing stories or knowledge. I think for me it's just really important to think about, you know, if you think about extractivism, in parallel you have to think about extractivism in the way you operate and you work, and the way the work that you make participates in perpetuating those mechanisms, and whether you do that or not, and how you can challenge that. So if you would be writing, or if you would be making music, or, you know, however else you would be working, I would want to have the same reflection. But then, well, photography has a very strong entanglement in the colonial history and the way it has been born and, you know, how it was used. And images are powerful, and that's why we need to be really careful with how, what they are, but also how they are being made.
It has so much power, but on the same hand, it is one of the means through which you can bring across what you want to bring across.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we do it because we respond to it probably stronger than to another thing, but that also, and obviously we can treat it differently, but I don't attach myself again to it so much. Because different situations call for different tools. What's nice to be quite flexible with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for this conversation.
Thank you.
And we hope, or at least I hope, if you go to a harbor or a wetland, you might think of our conversation, in what ways it is entangled, in what way you should know anything about it. And for now, thanks for listening. Bye bye.
Sun is shining.
And it's pretty hot in the car, actually, where we have been sitting. Whee! Did I forget anything?
I don't think so. I think that we've covered a lot of things. I didn't expect to talk about my work, but that was nice too. So.
Yeah, it was very nice, yes. Dear listener, thank you for listening to this episode of Photography and Society, the podcast. And in the beginning of this podcast, you've heard an image description. Olga, who took this photograph, is going to tell you a little bit more about it. And if you want, you can check it on our Instagram or on the Undisciplining Photography Symposium website.
Yeah, both of these photos were taken at a toxic waste lake in Romania, Germana Lake. And the other are trees and, the sort of hill completely, that color just disappeared from as an effect to all of those toxins. None of these images are treated. So that was that's quite maybe important to know. And I think that both of them, they are tricky in a sense that your mind goes instantly to some other connotation that you have, because of color of the water or something. But it's also, I think, because we talked about it also in the seminar, this lack of trust to images or the suspicion for the landscape. And I'm just always curious how people respond to that suspicion. Because usually when you're showing me an image like this, it's not just this. There is a story behind it. And I'm quite curious on how people respond to it. And I'm kind of curious how suspicious people might be of it.
Thank you for listening to this episode. The team of Photography and Society, the podcast, would like to thank Ben Smith, our supervisor, Echo the Dolphin and Julia Koch, who designed all the music parts, and the Department of Photography and Society of the Royal Academy of Art in The Hague. If you want to know more about the topic of this episode, please visit the platform where you found us for more info. Photography, Society.